All right, we're back for those fortunate few of you lucky enough to be watching us this, what is it, Tuesday? Yeah, it's Tuesday morning. Live. This will be going up later in the week just because that's the busy week. We've got like three of these things to do, and for a week last week when we had nothing to watch at all. Now we've got three cards this week and a dog. So big doings all around. We're here to t I'm joined by Victor Rodriguez of Bloody Elbow. I'm Zane Simon of Bloody Elbow, obviously. We're here to talk about World Series of Fighting 18, which I think at this point we're all still impressed that there is an 18th World Series of Fighting. And it's taking place on Thursday night in Canada, which would suggest that the World Series of Fighting is impressed that there's a World Series of Fighting as well. Crackling. But yeah, that's not an especially glorious card. It's an interesting card, I'll say. It's a better card than it looked like just on a casual glance. Mostly because they're kind of taking, it appears, the MFC approach and some of the MFC talent and loading up this card with exciting one-dimensional fighters. So it should at least be a pretty fun card to watch, even if it's not like mind-blowing on first look. What do you think, Vic? Are you interested in this card at all?
Yes. Yes, I'm definitely interested. Anytime Marlon Moraes is on a card, I'm very much interested. If for nothing else, I would actually recommend watching it if you have the time. It's on a Thursday. It's not going to be competing with anything, which is seems to be a favorable time slot given the way things are going right now in the landscape of the sport. So that's alone. I mean, what else are you going to watch, really? Yeah. If you want to get your fight fix, you got some veterans of the regional Canadian scene, some MFC guys that you may or may not have seen, but overall some pretty interesting and exciting talent that's really able to. There's a lot of possibility for some pretty solid excitement and some pretty good surprises here. So certainly something to keep an eye out for. So aside from the main event and the co-main event as well.
Yeah, I'll say that I'm just glad it's at 4 PST or Pacific time. That means that I get to like watch it in the middle of the afternoon, and I'm always a fan of mid-afternoon MMA. So that's something that's, at least if you're West Coast like me, that's nice. In the meantime, before we get into talking about the card, because we're gonna skip most of the prelim stuff. There are at least four fights on the prelims that I just can't even get myself to thinking of talking about. I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that have happened recently with World Series of Fighting. Obviously, the biggest one is news that John Fitch failed a pre-fight drug test for World Series of Fighting 16, which brought to mind my first thought was they're doing pre-fight drug tests at World Series of Fighting.
Well, they're regulated by the government, Zane Simon. It's the government testing them. Although
Still,
technically, in this case, it's actually true, unfortunately. But yeah.
I understand that there, some of the agencies are expanding their pre-fight testing processes, but I can't think that they're doing that for all cards all the way down. And World Series of Fighting is no longer quite the product I think that really warrants that. I mean, we're paying attention, but it's not, there was a time early on in their development when it seemed like they would be that third option of, a place for guys with some name value to go once they left the UFC that would pay them for big single fights without them tying up into Bellator and getting involved in the tournament format and all that. Now Bellator has become that place without the tournaments, and World Series of Fighting has sounds it's you know it seemed like they're on increasingly unstable financial footing, and they've been cutting back to more and more of a prospect-based organization. And suddenly we're getting these Thursday night cards.
Right. Well, I mean, like in the case of something like Bellator, instead of going with the sort of whiz-bang pace that they had gone on, they sort of shortened things out in order to sort of store up all of their eggs and make bigger events. which, you know, that's their, you know, their business model obviously changing in that manner. It makes things very different, and it changes the landscape, because now they're very clearly, I mean, they've always been a very clear number two. I don't think there was ever any question that, you know, World Series of Fighting would take that spot. Now that that's taking place and Bellator is experiencing a degree of growth, as well as the massive goodwill that Scott Coker has sort of brought in and some of the moves that they've made, and you look at the reputation the World Series of Fighting had at the beginning, they were putting on some events with some somewhat larger names, you know, and now we're ending up with cards that are a little more top-heavy, padded mostly with regional talent, which in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing. So long as we're honest about it, so long as we're not having Ali Abdelaziz talking about we're not a B-level organization, as if somehow that were meant to denigrate the promotion. I don't think that's necessarily right. You can still live in this ecosystem of combat sports and not necessarily be a premier organization and do well and do right by the fighters. So, you know, this move to Thursday nights, along with a couple of other downscaling moves that we've seen, I think it's fitting, and I think it's great because, you know, again, you don't have that competition. A guy like you can watch in the middle of the afternoon, you know, and it's all, you know, nobody loses. I think everybody gains. The regional guys a little lower on the totem pole get some decent exposure, too. So I really don't see much of a problem with this as long as we're being intellectually honest about what's going on.
Yeah, which that's always a bit of a, you know, that's a pretty big if in MMA, in the MMA landscape. But a Thursday night move does seem part, like, that seems like an honest move. And it's, because this is their first Thursday night card. And that's one of those things where it's just like, that's not putting you in competition with anybody else really out there right now.
No.
And that's great. Like, give your product its own night. People who are hardcore fans, that'll give them the time to show up and watch it. And you're not out there saying, we're going to grab the mainstream Friday night, Saturday night fight fan. And that's fine. No shame.
That's fine, yeah. Nope, none whatsoever.
So on that note, I mean, like I said, those are kind of the big... Those are the big news. The Thursday night change, the Fitch drug test failure, which, you know, I don't know how that'll fall out for them in the long term. I don't see them getting rid of Fitch. It probably just makes his bargaining position with them less valuable. You know, it makes it easier for them to keep him around and say, yeah, we don't have to pay that much because nobody else is going to take you now. But... you know, let's take a look at this card a little bit.
Absolutely.
They're going to be there's a prelim card starting at 5:45 Eastern, 2:45 Pacific, which I imagine will probably be live streamed online. I'm not seeing any how to watch thing on their website yet, but that would be my guess, is they tend to have those, that part of the card streamed online.
Yeah.
There's nothing on that really to talk about at all.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to the online prelims, they're usually not very good at posting anything until the actual day of the fight. Sometimes about a half an hour before, they'll start putting up the window for people to watch. So that's not that concerning. And, I mean, there are some fights that, again, they seem to have some promise to deliver on action, but they may not necessarily be of much interest to a lot of fans. So, you know, you'd be forgiven for skipping some of them, and that's fine as well, since, again, the most of the real meat and potatoes is going to be loaded into the main card as is, and that's pretty much it on that. You know, we're going to have some possibly fun, but if you don't really get it, I don't know if too many people are going to be kicking themselves over that.
No, it's just two fights, and it's nothing you should be watching. Now, there's a post-lim. Before we get to the main card, there's one post-lim fight. They're doing a three fight post-lim card. I don't even know how that'll be viewable. Maybe the same stream as the prelims. It may be just dark fights. I don't know. But there's one fight that I'll be at least interested to see the result if you can't actually watch it, which is Mukai Moromo versus Jose Rodriguez. And Moromo was something of a rising, I don't know, like if rising talent is quite the right thing to say for MFC, because they didn't tend to really develop a lot of guys in that way. But
No.
he was an interesting showcase talent for the MFC. He's been a long time Muay Thai competitor, very powerful kicking or kick heavy striker. Fun fighter to watch. No real great ground game or sub, you know, has been submitted by four, you know, he's lost all four of his fights to the same two people. He's 8-4. All four of his losses come to the same two people. Three of them by submissions. But he's a really fun striker, and it looks like in Jose Rodriguez, they may be fitting him up with somebody that, you know, maybe doesn't is maybe looking to grapple, but has not competed much in the past 4 years, and is probably set up to make him look pretty good. What do you know about that? Anything?
That seems, yeah. I mean, that seems likely. I don't see much in the way of, I mean, they have similar records. You know, you've got Moromo at 8-4, Rodriguez at 7-3. Moromo's got a very exciting striking style, as you mentioned, kick heavy, my favorite kind. Very dynamic with his striking, likes to shake things up, and he's really very he when he shows. When he's on point when it comes to his striking, he shows a level of precision and timing that's really, really good. So that's certainly something to look out for. Unfortunately, when it comes to Rodriguez, no relation, he's someone who there's not much video out there of. I really can't say too much about as far as what I've seen from him because there's very little to see. That being said, I mean, this really does seem like this was a matchup for either guy to win, but mostly to showcase Moromo. And yeah, unless he's brushed up his ground game and he's able to defend takedowns, I'm not sure how else he's really going to win this other than putting on a bit of a show standing. And that's probably what he's hoping to do as is.
Yeah, I mean, if you know, Rodriguez has some submissions, but they're like things like Kimura, armbar, anaconda choke. Like, it's not like rear naked chokes, guillotines, the kind of
Yeah.
consistent position heavy submissions that you see a lot that make you think, oh, this guy's just gonna sit on you, hold you down, and strangle the life out of you. It's the kind of thing you catch in transition or catch, you know, you maybe dive for and things like that. And it doesn't give me a lot of faith that he's gonna be able to hold Moromo down and sub him out. So it should be a fun, if we can even see it, it should be a fun fight to just get Moromo a win, who's because he's on a 2-fight losing streak, both by submission. So he definitely needs, if World Series of Fighting wants to make him an action fighter to watch for them, then he needs a showcase win. Which brings us then to our main card, starting out with a very similar matchup, although one that I think is probably going to be a bit more action heavy, with Hakeem Dawodu versus Tristan Johnson. Dawodu is also a Muay Thai striker, Canadian Muay Thai striker. And he's, you know, dabbling in MMA now. He's 3-0. And he's taking on, he's won all three of his fights by knockout. All of them have been for World Series of Fighting Canada. And he's taking on Tristan Johnson, who is 9-5. And I'll admit, I haven't seen much film on Johnson, but just a quick glance at his record would suggest to me that he's just kind of a scrappy brawler and that he's fighting a much more technical kickboxer, which could be a big problem.
That
What can you tell
seems
me?
very accurate because Dawodu, well, first off, he's more than just your conventional striker, and something that we briefly mentioned. Actually, I'm not sure if that was before we started, but there's a very strong presence, a very strong group of a batch of talent in the Western Canadian Muay Thai scene, and that's probably why they're so interested in doing some of these shows in Western Canada. You have a lot of those guys that are transitioning from kickboxing over to MMA, and it's actually a pretty good concept, you know, as long as it plays out well in execution. So you got Duwadu, who is a guy who's not just a kickboxer. He trains or has trained with Team Fit, which is the team that's it's among its members. You have Nick Ring and former UFC product Jason Day. I was pleasantly surprised with his last performance. I didn't think he'd do well against Mike Malott, and he ended up beating the brakes off of him in the first round. He was measured. He was composed. He's very strong. He's got a lot of snap on his punches. Johnson, as you mentioned, he is not perhaps as polished. He's certainly a lot less technical, but still more well-rounded. He's got some losses to current UFC talent Rob Font, as well as a loss to also World Series of Fighting veteran Rick Glenn. And he trains with it's Tristan Johnson that trains with, or used to train with Team Fit, not Duwadu. He trains with TJ Grant and Chris Caledes, both in the UFC. Much more well-versed on the ground, even if it doesn't have as much polish as well. He seems to be more of a generalist in this case, although he does have some savvy scrambles. I don't know how much of that is instinct or how much of that is him actually being as alert to his positioning, but he does pretty well with that. However, good luck getting Duwadu on the ground. You know, he's just a tough guy, and I'm not sure how tested his grappling has been. So this should definitely be interesting, and I'm glad that it's on the main card.
Yeah, it's definitely, like I say, this fight, they've matched up some real action fighters with some guys who should give them fun chances, opportunities to show why they're fun, you know, why these guys have potential and why these guys are fun to watch and all that. Like, I'm actually looking forward to seeing Hakeem Duwadu work and, you know, seeing if how well he can develop an MMA game to take on somebody who he should be able to beat, but should stay aggressive and stay after him and test him and make him work for it.
Yes. That sounds very accurate for this. That's good.
Next fight up as well. Fight that I don't know why I'm looking forward to it. It's actually, I think it's well matched up, and that's why I'm looking forward to it, even if it seems also just like one of those total sort of ridiculous circus fights, is Cody McKenzie versus Andrew McInnes. And, you know, to put it more precisely, it's the McKenzie team versus the Andrew Conda. And you know, it's two guys who have made a career out of being mission specialists and are only really interested in engaging the fight in one area. And it should make for a really interesting fight if both guys are willing to keep to that and not divert. I mean, McKenzie, for as joke, you know, for almost much of a running, you know, kind of punchline he's been in MMA, is really like, I almost feel stupid saying this, but it's like he's not as terrible as people think he is. Like, he's not good, but he was able to do a lot better in the UFC than people were willing to give him credit for. And then, you know, he doesn't look like he's training really very much now. So I have trouble thinking he's going to win this, but he's such a specialist grappler that it's one of those fights that I just kind of, I'm interested to see him engage another specialist grappler.
Okay, here's what's going on with what you just said. Either we're both insane or you're validating my crazy opinions of this thing, because I really don't think Cody McKenzie got a fair shake. Yes, a lot of his failures in the UFC were mostly his, they mostly fall on him. I know he had some personal problems and all that. But, I mean, let's be real. This guy had, you know, his first win was, I think, a finish due to strikes. Then he had some other submission, I think a triangle choke. And then he won, what was it, 10 straight through guillotines only? I mean, he basically had a modified guillotine also known in the jiu-jitsu circles as the Marcelo Tan, popularized by Marcelo Garcia, applying a different, I guess, a different degree of torque and finishing a lot quicker. So, I mean, it served him well, and a lot of people want to accuse certain fighters of being one-trick ponies. Hey, listen, if that trick is going to help you keep winning and get you paid, and other guys know that it's there and they still keep falling for it, that's not really on that fighter. So, you know, a guy who deserves so much more credit than him, and he's really not getting a lot of the respect that he should have gotten, mostly because of how bad he looked and progressively just seemed less motivated and less dedicated to his craft. I mean, that fight against Leonard Garcia, I mean, he out-wrestled him, and he started out striking him. I mean, it's crazy to see where he is now, you know, and I don't think that he should have. He's one of those guys that you never should have succeeded to the degree that he did. Yeah. You never should have gotten that opportunity against Chad Mendes, you might think, but hey, he won, and Mendes needed an opponent, and things happen, and look, man, you lose to Chad Mendes. That's not something to be ashamed of. So while he may not be championship caliber, he's certainly better than a lot of the internet fans, at least, would like to say or think he is. And I love the fact that he's taking on McGuinness. I mean, here's a guy who has only one loss on his record to current UFC product Chad Laprise. His last win was against Ryan Healy, obviously the brother of Pat Healy, very tough guy in his own right. All wins are by submission. He's got a Goga plot on his record, which I'll share that video later. He starts off with a mount, a mounted Goga plot. It transitions to the roll where he has the guy on top. I mean, he's very, very slick, and he's not taking any breaks. Very talented kid. His striking may not be where it needs to be, but he's getting by on a very, very dangerous ground game, and I really want to see where this goes. One last note on him. He's a Drysdale Jiu-Jitsu black belt, which explains a lot. Very savvy without the gi. And, you know, he also trains with Sheldon Westcott, who was on Tough Nations. Oh, was it the Canadian one where Elias Theodoro, I think, was the one who won that one? So, yeah. I mean, you know, he's not just some guy that they plucked out of the wilderness. He's actually a really solid guy who this fight is really, really looking, unless it turns into a sloppy kickboxing bout, which I doubt, it's going to be really good. So
yeah, I think the only way that that would happen would be if McGuinness was afraid of McKenzie's grappling, which would be absurd. Like, I mean, McKenzie's not the kind of guy to strike fear into anyone, and that's why he wins. Is it, you know, you walk out and you look at him and you're like, oh, I can walk over this guy, and then
ask Marcus Levesser about that, how that worked out.
So as long as McGuinness doesn't, you know, have much regard for McKenzie, this should be a fun fight. One of those fun fights that's just like, you know, it could be sloppy, it could be ridiculous, it could be all over the place, but it should be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Which brings us to our co-main event, and a fight that is more interesting, I think, than when I looked at it, because looking at it casually, nothing stood out to me about Shane Campbell versus Derek Boyle at all. I still can't say a whole lot stands out to me about Derek Boyle, except that he's winning. But Shane Campbell, Shaolin Shane Campbell, as he's called, is another, you know, like Moromo, like Dawadu, you know, another one of these Canadian kickboxers and Muay Thai strikers that's taking on MMA and has generally looked pretty good at it. And is fun, and especially as a nice change, isn't just a kick-heavy striker, but has some good hands, throws good, solid boxing combinations, is good at striking in transition, and you know, I think he's sort of like the Dawadu Johnson fight. He's getting sort of a skilled generalist, a guy who's going to go in there and just try to give him a scrappy fight everywhere, not necessarily just take him down and grind on him, although I wouldn't be surprised if that were Boyle's game plan. But somebody who, you know, it's not like Boyle's like an elite wrestler that's just going to come in and try and run over Campbell with elite wrestling. It's a chance for Campbell to kind of showcase, I'm a good enough MMA fighter at this point now that I can survive and show people my great striking skill. Because he doesn't, his takedown defense has been notably bad, so it is something he needs to continue to prove.
Well, I'll tell you what, this actually could be more exciting than you might think. Both of these guys, Shane Campbell, very dynamic with his striking, currently 10 and 2. He's got four submissions on his record. He has actually fought Derek Boyle before. They had a bout back in Score Fighting Series, I believe it was 2012. And Campbell won that fight, so he's got a ridiculous striking game. You know, he's when he's on point again, when he's focused, a lot of this, a lot of the explosive leg kicks, shots to the body. He likes to shake things up, and he does fairly well with it. Derek Boyle, on the other hand, can be pretty dynamic. He can has a tendency to get a bit sloppy with his striking, but he is, as you mentioned, more of a generalist. He does have somewhat decent wrestling, and he's able to sort of push the pace to a degree, depending on his opponent and what their skill set is like. Derek Boyle has losses to current UFC talent Jason Sago and also Chad Laprise as well. He's got a win also over Jose Rodriguez, who we mentioned earlier, curiously enough. And he trains out of Lethbridge in Canada, but also he spent some time at Jackson Winklejohn. So I don't know if that's going to help him much here or not. But he's very smooth under pressure, and he's got somewhat, and his striking can be very basic, but when he rolls the dice, he can pull out some very exciting high-risk stuff that may not, you know, it's very hit or miss, as pretty much anything is when you try a rolling spin kick or something. These are things that are going to happen. So we might see something pretty exciting here out of this.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's the kind of thing when I say that it's a good chance for Campbell to kind of show his skill. And I somehow missed that they'd fought before, but you know, what can I say? But you know, when you have somebody who's willing to take risks and is maybe not the most technical fighter in the world, that's usually like for somebody who is really technical and really specific in one area, that can be a good opportunity. Like that's how you win fights, and you know, that's how you can get the right opponent for you. So it should be an interesting matchup. Like I say, I mean, you know, just even before we get to the main event, you've got Campbell and McGinnis and Dawodu and Moromo, and these are all guys who are very singularly skilled and very aggressive in that singular skill. And they're all fighting opponents that should, to at least some degree, give them a chance to show that skill. So it you know, that's a good reason to be looking forward to this, especially like I say, on a Thursday night when as an MMA fan, you just don't have much else going on. You know, unless you have like a social life or some shit, but let's
Well, hey, I
pretend that, I
mean,
mean,
unless you got work and stuff, you know, hey, it happens.
Which does bring us then to our main event, Sheamus Moraes versus Josh Hill. And, you know, it's a quality. To me, I see this. It's immediately a quality test for Shaman, or for not Shaman Moraes, Marlon Moraes, wrong Moraes. So many
Marlon,
Moraeses.
yes, you mentioned the wrong Moraes. That's okay.
Yeah,
Ish.
not Shaman, not Sergio, Marlon.
Yes.
Marlon Moraes, Josh Hill. Seems like another quality test for Marlon Moraes. As long as he's still in World Series of Fighting, Hill's a guy who has been on Tough. He was on Tough 18. And he's kind of a power wrestler, grappler, and not a whole lot else. But that's, you know, I mean, Marlon Moraes, for somebody we're talking about, once again, another really talented Muay Thai striker from that sort of Brazilian Muay Thai set. Let's watch him fight somebody, you know, somebody who's a consistent grinding wrestler and see how, you know, see how he takes care of that. It's not his, you know, it's, if we're looking at Marlon Moraes as something more than just a sort of showcase talent, then there's no reason not to see him in a fight like this, at least to me.
Yeah, well, here's the thing with Josh Hill. I mean, he was, as you mentioned, on The Ultimate Fighter, and surprisingly enough, he won in the first round against current UFC talent Patty Holahan. He didn't make it any further in the house. He eventually lost, and there's, again, it's a grueling thing. I mean, there's no shame in that either. As his professional record stands, he's currently 10-0. Not really any notable names, which is, you know, I guess it's sort of par for the course when it comes to the Canadian scene. Sometimes, you know, you have some of these fighters that, you know, there's a bit of an incestuous relationship with some of these guys here. There's a lot of opponents in common. It seems to be a theme in a lot of these Canadian cards. You have guys that have either fought each other or have three or four opponents in common. Now, that aside, Hill, you know, he's actually the opponent that Moraes was supposed to take on during his last fight with Cody Bollinger bout, and Hill had to pull out due to injury. And, you know, he's a talented, pressure-heavy, moving-forward wrestler. You know, he's very much, you know, he's got a very solid shot. You know, his timing and his speed and his athleticism may present some problems for Marlon. Problem is, you're talking about Marlon. I mean, the guy is, he's just a very, his reflexes are amazing. His fight IQ is pretty solid. And the only major knock, as we've discussed before in some of his previous bouts, is that he's too merciful. I mean, if that's the major draw against you, if that's the major flaw that you have as a fighter, I mean, I don't really know what other possibility Hill has. He's not going to outstrike him. He's going to have a very hard time taking him down. I don't see many avenues for victory for Shaq Hill. I'd be very shocked if he were to win, but I do expect that we will see some interesting and some entertaining action because Marlon is definitely worth watching, and Hill is talented in his own right. So it's another one of those wait and see. I like the way that it's at least set up, but I don't see much of a possibility for him to win that.
Yeah, it's hard not to pick Moraes. I mean, it's a very, you know, especially a wrestle-heavy fighter against somebody who's a really good striker and who has capable takedown defense, it becomes incredibly easy to become predictable. It's just like, I have to shoot, I have to get him down. And then the shots come from too far out, they come predictably, they get stuffed, and then, you know, the leg kicks and all that start to add up. And it's hard not to see this as a fight that Moraes should win, but you know, it's always good to see a guy who is supposed to be one of the better strikers out there take on a power wrestler that's going to challenge them and try to make it an ugly fight for them and to see how they do. So, you know, if Moraes wins, it should be set up to be a pretty fight, and otherwise it's a fight that should be interesting if you're interested in how fighters develop and, you know, talent rise on the rise and stuff like that. Honestly, there's not a whole lot else to cover here. I think that's, you know, like I say, there are four other bouts on this card, none of which I think we should be spending any of our time on. Do you have anything that you want to go over?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to briefly address the signing of Blagoy Ivanov, former Bellator talent, who also was made an overnight star in the MMA world after defeating Fedor Emelianenko in the Sambo Championships. Very, very solid prospect. I'm really, really excited to see this guy now that he's left Bellator. I don't know what the reasoning behind his release was, if he asked for it or if there was some sort of dispute. But I don't think I've been this excited to see a guy in World Series of Fighting since, I mean, it's been a while, probably since Wisimar Polaris, you know? I mean, the only other prospect after him was the Canadian redhead ring girl, who we might see this time again, who caused a bit of a Twitter thing. But no, man, I don't know who he's going to be paired up with. He may end up in that light heavyweight tournament if he decides to cut down the one we've covered last time, in which Thiago Silva and Matt Hamill will be taking place. That'll be next month.
Yeah, that would be March.
It would be strange, but I would actually be much more intrigued than seeing him. I mean, you know, unless he gets an immediate title shot against Melina Rama, I don't know what else they could really do.
Well, yeah, he could. It would be interesting. I mean, he would be a great first title challenger for Smilino. No doubt about it, but it would make that tournament that they're planning on running really fascinating if it's Matt Hamill and Thiago Silva and Blagoj Ivanov. I would actually suddenly, the parts of me that hate how easily excited I get about circus grade entertainment would be showing up for that.
Oh, well, I mean, you're talking to a Pride fan, so I mean, I'm not going to judge you for that either way. But I mean, I don't know if there's any better signing for them right now than this guy, given the free agency that we see and how thin it is, especially in the heavier weight classes at heavyweight and light heavyweight. I mean, the possibility that he might cut down isn't something that's being floated around, but I can see it since he's not a very large heavyweight to begin with. He may be convinced to drop down. And so if that's the case, it makes everything interesting in either one of those, which are kind of dry on talent in the overall sense. I mean, most of those guys that are really at the top of the heap are in the UFC as it is. So, it's something that's worth looking out for. I'm sure we'll hear some news of it sometime, maybe in the next coming weeks or by the next event. We've got a whole month and almost a month and a half before that happens. Outside of that, Antonio Carvalho was supposed to fight Chris Grootsenmacher on this card. Grootsenmacher, you may not have heard of him, but he's a very promising young man out of the MMA lab in Arizona, Benson Henderson teammate, all that. It's a shame. It's a shame we're not going to see this. Maybe we'll see this down the line. Grootsenmacher was injured first. Carvalho was offered another opponent. He was already injured as well, but he figured he would fight through it. Given the circumstances, he decided to pull out. Can't blame him. So we have that. And that pretty much covers what I had for this event right here. It's worth watching. Give it a shot. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it'll be fun. I'm glad it's on Thursday. Like I said, it makes me actually interested in showing up for it, especially with like a whole bunch of fun strikers and a weird grappling match on there. Otherwise, thanks for dropping by. You can find Vic at Vic M. Rodriguez on Twitter and me at The Zane Simon. You can find me at Bloody Elbow as well, and Vic in the moderators comment section on Bloody Elbow. And we'll be back soon. We got a bunch more of these to do for Bellator, for UFC. There'll be a Care Don't Care. There'll be Sixth Round. There's all sorts of other stuff going on. If you watch this on YouTube, remember to give it a like. That's the thumbs up button down below. And thanks for tuning in.